Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated May 31st, 2019. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Brain Cancer Awareness Month. Moms make childhood cancer a fight to share. Memories of their three sons inspire support for others. Decatur. Tears and laughter flow in equal measure when talking to moms of kids who had cancer. May is Brain Cancer Awareness Month, and three Decatur moms have become allies in the effort to provide support and information to families who are going through what they've been through. Gloria Martin's son, Silas, died at age 16 in December 2014 after a decade-long battle with brain tumors. Shannon Carter's son, Adam, died in 2010 when he was 12 of Ewing sarcoma, a cancer that ultimately traveled to his brain. And Amy Gillen's son, Tanner, died in January at the age of 14 from glioblastoma, an aggressive form of brain cancer. Now, people say, get over it and move on, Carter said. You never get over it. You move forward, Martin added, but you don't move on. Pediatric cancer care, particularly for brain tumors, is hard to find. Little research funding is available for brain tumors in children, medically defined as birth to age 19. Hospice is also hard to find when a terminally ill child needs care in the final months. Most cancer research and end-of-life services are designed for adults. And as parents of terminally ill children, Gillen said, they want to try every possible thing that might make a difference, but another hurdle they face is insurance claims. They all heard numerous suggestions that they just go to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, which doesn't charge families for treatment. But because St. Jude is a clinical research facility, being accepted as a patient is based on certain eligibility criteria. The worst part, all three moms agree, is the helpless feeling of watching your child suffer and being unable to do anything about it. We've been posting on Facebook a lot about brain tumor awareness, brain cancer awareness, Martin said. You are not alone on this journey. I know that a couple of years ago I talked to Shannon about how you do this, all the fundraising events and everything with it. It's all still so fresh. When Martin heard about Tanner, she was hesitant to contact his family, but she thought offering support was important. There's support groups for everything else, Carter said, but not for parents like us. Adam was treated in Springfield, Carter said, because there was no specialized pediatric cancer center in this area. Silas and Tanner were treated in St. Louis. The funding for pediatric and brain cancer is horribly low, Gillen said. The funding is mostly for adults. More adults are diagnosed, so all of the medicines and research are on adults. Children are a special group. They're not just little adults. A 2016 report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention showed that brain cancer had replaced leukemia as the most deadly childhood cancer in the U.S. Officials attributed the change to improved treatments for leukemia and a lack of progress on brain cancer. While cancer deaths among children dropped from 1999 to 2014, the disease was the fourth leading cause of death for children overall. In 2014, it accounted for about 1 in 10 childhood deaths, and about a quarter of those deaths were due to brain cancer, the study found. Silas was fully aware of his condition and his prognosis, and told his family that he wanted his brain to be donated to Dr. Josh Rubin, professor of pediatrics and neuroscience and co-director of the Pediatric Neuro-Oncology Program at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis. Rubin said in 2014 that thanks to Silas and other donations, there has been some progress in research. Thanks to Silas's donation, we could potentially identify the reason they don't respond and learn to recognize them better and change the therapy in a way that might better treat them. While it's still too early to consider any of the progress a breakthrough, Rubin is encouraged and hopes hopes that the donations that started with Silas will help doctors discover common features and new treatments. Adam was receiving chemotherapy for Ewing sarcoma when doctors discovered the cancer had spread, Carter said. All of a sudden, they're telling me there's a brain tumor, she said. We've been in chemo this whole time. How could it go to his brain? Gillen said humans have a blood-brain barrier that keeps medication from reaching the brain, which she learned while Tanner was being treated, and it makes treating brain tumors especially exceptionally difficult. Tanner received steroids to relieve pressure and gained a significant amount of weight. Because he didn't lose his hair or weight, Gillen said, to many people, he didn't look sick. I think especially when dealing with brain tumors, people need to know that it changes everything. It's insidious, Gillen said. Early signs of a brain tumor can be deceptive, but any of these should be checked out. New onset or change in the pattern of headaches. Headaches that become more frequent and severe. Unexplained nausea or vomiting. Vision problems such as blurred vision, double vision, or loss of peripheral vision. Gradual loss of sensation in an arm or a leg. Difficulty with balance or speech. Confusion in everyday matters. Personality or behavior changes. Seizures, particularly in someone with no history of seizures. Hearing problems. This time last year, Tanner wasn't diagnosed, Gillen said. They thought he had a stroke. Tanner came home with a bad report card when he'd always gotten straight A's. When his mom asked him what happened, he said his hand didn't work. The next week, his leg didn't work. Tanner had a CT scan and doctors diagnosed a stroke. But he continued to decline instead of improve. It was some time before the tumor was diagnosed. Adam's cancer was first diagnosed after he found a lump himself. That night, he was watching TV with his dad and saw a commercial for a cancer treatment center. And he said, I hope I don't have to go there, his mom said. Silas was first diagnosed at age 6 and had 7 tumors over the course of his disease until his death at age 16, including a surgery to have his right temporal lobe and hippocampus removed in 2010. So much is unknown about the brain, Joan said. But what we do know is the donation of tissue is so important. If we don't donate, we will never find a cure. Two people can have the same cancer, she said, but have entirely different genetic markers, making the progression of the disease unique to each. In Tanner's case, he had markers most often seen in women with aggressive breast cancer. The family insurance refused to pay for medication to treat that, Gillen said. Martin remembers Silas showing symptoms as early as age 4 and remembers asking why he couldn't just look into his brain and see what was going on. He was almost 6 when he had an ophthalmological exam, and the change on his optic nerve alerted doctors to his condition. He had many surgeries, but before the last one, the family was warned that he might not survive the surgery, and she was the one who had to tell him that. He said, it's okay, Mom. Doesn't matter as long as you give my brain to Dr. Rubin, because Dr. Rubin was at Washington University and doing research, Martin said. All 3 boys died in their own homes, surrounded by their families, and in Adam's case, Bert, the bulldog, he wanted for so long and named for his favorite Cardinals player, Albert Pujols. Gillen said Tanner died at 8:30 in the evening and they didn't call anyone until 11:30 because they couldn't let go quite yet. She bathed and chafed him, she said, because those were the things she had to do as a mother. The funeral home picked us up the next morning and we rode to Chicago and he donated his brain and his spine, Gillen said. The women meet weekly for conversation or prayer or just to be together to help each other, and they want to be available to other families. All 3 families have worked to raise money for pediatric cancer, and the Gillens have a Facebook page, #TannerTough, to raise awareness and money for research. And in the pictures, there's Gloria Martin holds a photo of her son Silas Martin. And in another picture, Amy Gillin holds a rock that was made for her with the slogan hashtag TannerTough. And it's painted red for Cardinals and has in yellow hashtag TannerTough. And then in white, it says no Cardinal fights alone. And it's got a cardinal and a yellow ribbon. And in another picture, Shannon Carter shows off one of her favorite photos of her son. And on the front page, the main picture are all three mothers, Shannon Carter, Amy Gillin, and Gloria Martin, pose with photos, with pictures, for a photo with pictures of their children who they lost to brain tumors. The three mixed the photos of each child to show the bond they have together. So they exchange their sons with each other, the pictures of their sons. Another story, Tanaja Barnes looking for answers. Girl's father suing DCFS. Lawsuit alleges agency neglect in Tanaja's death. Decatur. The father of 2-year-old Tanaja Barnes is suing Webster Cantrell Hall over the death of his daughter, accusing the Decatur agency of negligence when it oversaw her care months before she died of starvation and neglect. The nonprofit's oversight ended in October when an Illinois Department of Children and Family Services case involving Tanaja was closed by a judge. Less than 6 months later, police found Tanaja's cold, lifeless body on February 11th in the Decatur home where she lived with her mother and mother's boyfriend. The two have pleaded not guilty to charges of murder and endangering the life and health of a child. Dartavarius Barnes, Tanaja's biological father who lives in Springfield, has said he knew that his daughter was in a bad situation in the Decatur home. He told reporters that he tried to get custody of his daughter and even thought about kidnapping her. DCFS has launched an investigation into its involvement in the case. Webster Cantrell Hall had acted on behalf of the state to provide foster care for Tanaja and her younger half brother, and to monitor her for several months after she was returned to her mother. The federal lawsuit filed May 24th also names Amanda Beasley Ricks, a foster care case coordinator at Webster Cantrell Hall. The Herald and Review reached out to agency CEO Michael Warner and Beasley Ricks by email for comment on Thursday evening. Webster Cantrell Hall has previously referred all requests for comment to DCFS. Police have said that Tanaja was found unresponsive, wrapped in a urine-soaked blanket in an unheated room. The child had been returned to the custody of her mother, Tawanka L. Davis, and mother's boyfriend, Anthony Myers, in August, 9 months after the state first removed her from their care in December 2017. A judge ordered the case closed in October. The lawsuit alleges that Webster Cantrell required employees to close child protection cases in the most expedient manner without regard to the adequacy of the children's living situation, that it failed to train employees on signs of abuse and neglect. Barnes had custody of Tanaja for a time between March 18th and June 2018 and June 2018, but she was removed after a hotline call alleged abuse. Tanaja was again placed in foster care June 27th and was returned to Davis and Myers on August 8th. Webster Cantrell Hall monitored the home through weekly visits for several months after that, according to information provided by DCFS. In the lawsuit, Barnes said Webster Cantrell Hall put his child in heightened danger when it removed her from his care and returned her to Davis. He said the agency knew that Davis had a history of mental illness, parental unfitness with abuse and neglect and drug and alcohol abuse, and an uninhabitable and unsuitable residence for Tanaja. Barnes has been appointed administrator of his daughter's estate, according to the lawsuit. Tanaja's case is one of several high-profile deaths this year of children whose families had been involved with DCFS. Governor J.B. Pritzker has asked that fixing the long-troubled state agency is one of his administration's highest priorities. On March 27th, he chose a new leader, Mark Smith, then executive vice president of foster care and intact services at Olympia Fields-based Aunt Martha's Health and Wellness. Earlier this month, Pritzker's office released a report that found a number of problems with the DCFS division charged with keeping families intact. Services for that division are provided to families mostly by private agencies that contract with the department. The government has promised reforms while saying that systematic problems facing DCFS will take time to address fully. There's nothing more important to me as governor than getting this right, Pritzker said earlier this month. Oh, there's a little bit more to the story on brain cancer. May is Brain Cancer Awareness Month. An estimated 86,970 people will receive a brain tumor diagnosis this year. Average survival rate for malignant brain tumor patients is 35%. The median age at diagnosis is 60. Pediatric brain tumors are the leading cause of cancer deaths in children. And that's from the National Brain Tumor Society. And there's another picture of Shannon Carter shows off a tattoo with Adams, her son Adam's favorite number, which was 33. General Assembly. House gives okay to tiered income taxes. Springfield. Democrats, who control the Illinois House on Thursday, approved tiered income tax rates that would take effect if voters opt for revamping state taxation to hit higher incomes harder, a plan they say is aimed at attacking the state's crippling debt. The 67-48 vote followed blistering criticism from Republicans. They claimed it's not the ticket to financial stability that Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker promises, but to runaway government spending. The vote came on the next-to-last day of the General Assembly's spring session and finalized a Pritzker campaign centerpiece. The plan would replace the current 4.95% flat rate with a progressive scale topping out at 7.99% for the wealthiest residents of Illinois. The overall would raise $3.4 billion in new annual revenue, according to Pritzker. It would take effect in 2021 only if voters in next year's election approve an amendment to the state constitution, which currently stipulates that income be taxed at a flat rate. This rate structure would raise the appropriate amount of revenue to pay our bills and set the state on a more stable financial course, said Representative Michael Zalewski, a Riverside Democrat who sponsored the plan. Minor changes the House made in the measure need to an okay from the Senate, which planned to consider them Thursday night. Thursday's vote was on what rates would apply to the scale if voters choose change, starting at 4.75% for incomes up to $10,000. They jumped significantly to 7.75% for incomes over $250,000 and top out at 7.99% for single filers earning more than $750,000. The corporate rate would increase from 7% to 7.99%. Pritzker's mantra for advocating the plan is that 97% of Illinoisans would pay no more taxes because those earning less than $250,000 would be taxed at most at the 4.95% rate. The rates would take effect in 2021 if voters approve amending the Constitution. Republicans don't believe the largesse will pay down debt. Here we go again. Taxes, taxes, and more taxes, said Representative Dave McSweeney, a Barrington Hills Republican. The middle class is going to suffer. This is a Trojan horse. We all know this is being used to sell the voters on falsehoods. Stop the madness. Vote no. Illinois is awash in debt associated with years of skipping required pension contributions, overspending, a 2015 to 17 budget dispute that resulted in $15 billion associated with past due bills, and raising costs which existing revenue didn't catch. Pritzker claims the alternatives include devastating spending cuts or stratospheric hikes in their flat rate tax. "We will stabilize Illinois' finances," Pritzker said in a statement following the vote. Opponents should be honest that they offer bad options, either cutting schools and public safety to the bone, or raising taxes on everyone by 20%. "Instead, I stand firmly on the side of working families and fairness. But differing rates based on income would merely encourage Democrats to increase spending and cover it with hiked taxes at the highest level with no solution to the mess," said GOP Representative Margo McDermott of Mokena. "It's always easy to increase taxes on higher earners and not on the lower earners," McDermott said. "The temptation to do that is increased by the fact that we haven't addressed a single one of the drivers of our expenses. Not one, not pensions, not Medicaid, not salaries, and not the increases in the latest budget," she said. In more like local and state news on page A3, there's a big picture. It says Operation Cookie Share. And it shows some women in green Girl Scout t-shirts selling Girl Scout cookies, and a woman in a costume, a cookie costume that says Samoas, and another woman holding a sign said, "Support the military, send Girl Scout cookies." And the caption is, "Earth Mover Credit Union Shelley Coslow, left to right, 95Q's Brittany Campbell and Diana Ashby sell Girl Scout cookies during Operation Cookie Share in Central Park in Decatur. Earth Mover Credit Union and Newhoff Media hosted the sixth annual effort. The goal was to send 10,000 boxes of Girl Scout cookies to military and local first responders. Operation Cookie Share is one of the most highly supported efforts by our communities, and on the heels of Memorial Day weekend, as people across the country celebrate those who have made the ultimate sacrifice. This is our way of showing appreciation to those still serving and protecting our freedom," Girl Scouts of Central Illinois Executive Director Pam Kovacevich said. To support the effort, visit getyourgirlpower.org. That's all one word. getyourgirlpower.org. Murder charge made in stabbing. Decatur. A 47-year-old Decatur man has been indicted on second-degree murder charges in the November fatal shooting, of 22-year-old Tobby J. Buse, Macon County State's Attorney J. Scott said Thursday. San Antonio Buyer Sr. was booked into the Macon County Jail on Thursday in lieu of $500,000 bond. Scott said Byers was indicted Wednesday by a grand jury on two counts of second-degree murder in Buse's death, and the only person who has been arrested in the investigation of the case. Jail records show that Byers is scheduled to appear in court June 7th. Police said officers were called to a parking lot at 1080 East Mound Road in reference to a possible stabbing victim at 1:30 a.m. Sunday, November 4th. Buse was found with what appeared to be a stab wound to the chest and was taken to Decatur Memorial Hospital for treatment. He was later pronounced dead in the DMH emergency room at 1:38 a.m. During a December coroner's inquest, Decatur Police Detective Barry Hitchens told a coroner's jury that Buse died after an argument over a nighttime impromptu street drag race. The vehicle Buse was in won the race, but the other driver refused to pay the previously agreed prize of $100, he said. Both vehicles ended up driving to the Woodmound Plaza Shopping Center's parking lot off North Woodford Street, where the argument over the prize money became violent, Hitchens said. The other man stabbed Buse with a knife on the right side of his chest, Hitchens said. The Macon County coroner, Michael Day, said an autopsy found that the deep knife wound penetrated Buse's heart and his right lung. In briefs, state police traffic patrols, Decatur. Illinois State Police District 10 said officers issued 30 citations and 13 written warnings during special traffic enforcement patrols May 23rd in Macon County. Citations issued were one occupant restraint violation, 13 speeding citations and warnings, 7 distracted driving citations and warnings. These DEPs allowed the ISP to provide increased enforcement for impaired driving. I think it's these steps, I think, allowed the ISP to provide increased enforcement for impaired driving, occupant restraint, speeding, and distracted driving violations during the National Click It or Ticket campaign, the department said in a statement. Coroner IDs body, Decatur. The Macon County coroner on Thursday said the body found dead in the 1300 block of East Walnut Street on Wednesday is that of 29-year-old Kimberly D. Mashburn. A cause of death has not been released. Mashburn was found in a truck and pronounced dead at 7:02 p.m., Coroner Michael Day said in a statement. An autopsy is scheduled Thursday afternoon at the McLean County Morgue. We are currently investigating the circumstances around the death, Decatur Police Sergeant Chris Copeland said. Police Lieutenant Shannon Seal on Wednesday said officers were dispatched to the scene at 4:30 p.m. Debit card theft, Decatur. A 31-year-old man was arrested after using two stolen debit cards at Decatur stores, police said. The man made purchases at Walmart, Crickles West, Kroger, Sally's Beauty Supply, and other stores, Sergeant Chris Copeland said. A 48-year-old man told police on April 25th that he noticed over $500 worth of fraudulent charges were made on his debit card, Copeland said. Another victim, a 30-year-old woman, told police on May 3rd she noticed a little under $300 worth of fraudulent charges on her debit card. Copeland said the cases were assigned to the same detective who obtained transaction records for both cards and reviewed surveillance footage at the stores and the where the cards were used. The suspect was identified and arrested early Thursday. The man was booked into the Macon County Jail and faces two preliminary felony charges of identity theft, which are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. Bond had not been set on as of Thursday morning. Richland filling board vacancy. Richland Community College's Board of Trustees is seeking applicants for a vacancy on the board. The trustee Jim Underwood has resigned, and the board will appoint a replacement who will serve out his term that ends with the next election in 2021, and who will also commit to running for re-election in 2023. Successful candidates must live in the Richland District, understand the difference in the role of a volunteer board member, and the leadership and management roles of the college's president and staff. Have a commitment and availability to prepare for and attend monthly board meetings. Submit a resume and cover letter to Richland Community College, President's Office, 1 College Park, Decatur, Illinois, 62521, or MadonnaAB at richland.edu no later than noon Thursday, June 13th. Again, that's a letter to Richland Community College, President's Office, 1 College Park, Decatur, 62521, or MadonnaB, MadonnaAB at richland.edu no later than noon Thursday, June 13th. Richland Market, Decatur Richland Community College's Saturday Market opens 8 a.m. to noon Saturday, June 1st, and will reopen every Saturday through September. The market's new location is next to the Richland Bistro 537 Restaurant, 1 College Park on the west side of the campus. Children's activities and baked goods are available in addition to fresh produce, cut flowers, pasteurized beef and pork, specialty brats, and annual perennial plants, artisan vendors, and barbecue food truck. Live entertainment will be Wade Thomas. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated May 31st, 2019. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.